This is the night after. Did you? I'm not going to talk about Obama's speech last night because if that was a State of the Union speech, I don't know really what the State of the Union is this morning. I really don't. It was a some kind of speech, but whatever. Hey, William Grider, you know who he is? Writer, he writes economic issues, used to be with Rolling Stone, writes for The Nation. He has an article in the January 24th issue of The Nation. I'm not going to share the whole thing with you, but just a couple of paragraphs, because it's very important. There are people in the society who are making salient observations about where we are in this country and what we have to do to either move forward or just call it a day and give in to predatory gangster capitalism. Grider says, we've reached a pivotal moment in government and politics, and it feels like the last groaning spasms of New Deal liberalism, you know, going back to FDR. When the party of activist government, that's the Democrats, faced with an epic crisis, will not use government's extensive powers to reverse the economic disorders and heal deepening social deterioration, that it must be the end of the line for the governing ideology inherited from Roosevelt, Truman, and Johnson. Very true. Grider goes on, political events of the past 2 years have delivered a more profound and devastating message. It's this. American democracy has been conclusively conquered by American capitalism. Government has been disabled or captured by the formidable powers of private enterprise and concentrated wealth. Self-governing rights that representative democracy conferred on citizens are now usurped by the overbearing demands of corporate and financial interests. Collectively, Grider writes, the corporate sector has its arms around both political parties, the financing of political careers, the production of the policy agendas, and propaganda of influential think tanks, and control most of major media. What the capitalist system wants is more. More wealth, more freedom to do whatever it wishes. This has always been its instinct, unless government intervened to stop it. The objective now is to destroy any remaining forms of government interference, except, of course, for business subsidies and protections. Many elected representatives are implicitly enlisted in the cause. And he goes on. It's a very interesting article. And there's one more paragraph that I think is it is predictive, but it's also it's a call to arms. You've heard that term before, right? Society faces dreadful prospects and profound transformation. When both parties are aligned with corporate power, who will stand up for the people? Who will protect the people from the insatiable appetites of capitalist enterprise and help them get through the hard passage ahead. One thing we know for sure from history, there is no natural limit to what capitalism will seek in terms of power and profit. If government does not stand up and apply the brakes, society is defenseless. Like I say, it's a much longer article, but it bears reading. I think anyone who considers themselves to be a small D Democrat, I'm not talking about member of the Democratic Party. I'm not even talking if you're a liberal or progressive. No, if you're an American and you believe that, I mean, you're an American for the most part by virtue of your birth. But if you're an American by virtue of your birth or due to the fact that you emigrated here, I think the article that William Grider has written is especially pertinent because this is something that you and I have been talking about for the better part of a decade. Well, actually longer than that, but especially in the past 10 years, the end of democracy in this country. It sounds very apocalyptic. It sounds very, you know, like, oh, my God, what's he talking about? But you know what the deal is. You do know. And there is a handful of writers in this country, political writers, that I deeply respect. William Grider happens to be one of them. And my respect for his writing is nothing new. I've been reading Grider, oh, my God, 20 years. So, I'm hoping that you have gone to worldcantwait.org. Is that the website, Kathy? Worldcantwait.org? They're the ones that are sponsoring the March 19th demonstration in Washington, D.C. The speakers are being organized by Veterans for Peace, and I called them today and said, listen, I'd like to volunteer to be one of your speakers. I don't know if anything, they may have their lineup already in place, but I'm volunteering. And it doesn't make any difference. I will be there. March 19th is a Saturday, and I will be there. I hope you will, too. I've been watching the action in the Middle East, in North Africa, as it spreads. What do we have? We have Tunisia. Egypt is just boiling over, as well it should. Egypt, of course, has been one of our subsidiaries. It was the only Arab country, or Muslim, not Arab, but Muslim country, that we could buy in order to cooperate with Israel. The Israeli-Egyptian peace accords that go way back. But the dictator there, Hosni Mubarak, that we have supported, sponsored, kept in power all these years, 30 years, this dictator has been in power. This is, of course, this is what U.S. foreign policy does. The more absolute power and control a dictator has, and the more order he can impose upon his country, and it's always a he, the more the United States will support that dictator, especially in the Middle East. I mean, there is not a democracy in the Middle East. I know the Israelis claim to be a democracy. They're an apartheid state for the Israelis. Yeah, it's a democracy of a sort, but just like South Africa was a democracy of a sort for white people, so is Israel a democracy of a sort for the Jewish people or the Israelis. But it is by definition an apartheid state. There is not a democracy in the Middle East. The tyrants who run these countries are tyrants that have been supported explicitly or implicitly, by the United States for generations because we need their oil. So the explosions going on in North Africa right now are going and in Lebanon are going to have profound effects. And I think we're going to see it spreading very rapidly. We'll be right back.
He's the primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Do you have the Glenn Beck exhortation? I want to hear that. But before you play it, a couple of people have sent me comparative photos, side-by-side photos of Gerald Loeffner. Jared Loeffner with his head shaved, and Glenn Beck with his not shaved. And I mean, it's amazing. It looks like separated at birth, these two, Jared Loeffner and Glenn Beck. Check it out if you don't believe me. And as reported today, when the Beck-inspired murderer showed up in court, was it today? He's not crazy. One of the news organizations pointed out that Loeffner had, according to the police, had visited, I guess the police, maybe a district attorney, I don't know, had visited several websites explaining the process of dying by lethal injection. So this Beck-inspired killer knew exactly what he was doing and knew he would get caught. And, you know, to mount a sanity or insanity plea, it would be ridiculous. This is what he was listening to a few months ago.
The radicals that you in Washington have co-opted and brought in wearing sheep's clothing, change the pose. You get the ends. You've been using them. They believe in communism. They believe and have called for revolution. You're going to have to shoot them in the head. But warning, they may shoot you.
You're going to have to shoot them in the head. Jared Loeffner is not crazy. He is a Beck acolyte. He was inspired by Beck, and more people will do the same. Ayn Rand. I want to talk a little bit about Ayn Rand. She was born Alisa Zinovyevna Rosenbaum. In 1905, she died in 1982. She was a Russian-American person. She is known for her two best-selling novels and for developing a philosophical system she called objectivism. Born and educated in Russia, she came to the United States in 1926. She worked as a screenwriter in Hollywood, had a play produced on Broadway. She wrote The Fountainhead, of course, and her magnum opus, the philosophical novel Atlas Shrugged, came out in 1957. That was the same year that On the Road came out. anyway, she considered reason to be the only means of acquiring knowledge and its advocacy the most important aspect of her philosophy. She stated one time, quote, "I am not primarily an advocate of capitalism, but of egoism. And I am not primarily an advocate of egoism, but of reason. If one recognizes the supremacy of reason and applies it consistently, all the rest follows." Well, guess what? She was also a complete hypocrite. totally, complete hypocrite. Now listen up, all you teabag night crawlers. First of all, Michael Ford, writing at Huffington Post, put this out here. And despite persistent rumors, let's get something real clear. Rand Paul was not named in honor of Ayn Rand. His real name is Randall. It's Randall Paul, okay? And Elisa Zinovievna Rosenbaum changed her name to Ayn Rand because she had a Rand typewriter. And there it was right in front of her, Rand. So that's where her name came from. She, as you know, she was a great proponent of rugged individualism and, most of all, personal responsibility. Da-da! She was a staunch opponent of government programs from the New Deal and Social Security to the Great Society and Medicare. Oh, wasn't she? She was just an absolute fiery proponent that these programs were communism and corrupt and filthy and degenerate. And all of her offspring, her political offspring since 1957, have all advocated the same phony crap. Just like what's her name? Michelle Bachmann, who screams against Medicare, and yet her husband, who runs a sleazy, bring in the old people, give me the money, rest home, nursing home, he collects Medicare checks left and right. Every single libertarian is a goddamn hypocrite, A, B, a coward. Now, let me reverse it. A, a coward, B, a hypocrite. Every single one of them. Now, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I have something to share with you about the author of Atlas Shrugged that I think you're going to find interesting. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Abuse. That's Rush Limbaugh's territory. 25 before the hour. All right. Ayn Rand, the great libertarian, the great defiler of democracy, small d democracy, is no such thing to Ayn Rand. You pull yourself up by your bootstraps, you succeed, and if you build a building that is not seen as a success by the corporate powers, you tear it down. Of course, if you are the corporate powers, then you can always just tear it down anyway. You know what I'm getting at. So, a Library of Congress survey of the most influential books on American readers, Atlas Shrugged ranked second only to the Bible. Ayn Rand's influence is encyclopedic, ranging from Alan Greenspan to Paul Ryan, the guy that one of the right-wing freaks that answered Obama's cheerleader speech last night. Paul Ryan, of course, believes that the aim of the Republican Party is to cut or privatize Medicare and Social Security because they are socialist or communist or, you know, they're not libertarian ideas. As Michael Ford of Huffington Post writes, the right, the political right, should be commended politically for their ability to develop and stick to a unified message. They all say the same thing. But close inspection of this unified message reveals a disappointing secret identified by a student of the godfather of neoconservatism, the University of Chicago's Leo Strauss. The student, Ann Norton, who wrote Leo Strauss and the Politics of American Empire, identified what she called VIP dip. That's VIP-DIP, VIP dip, which means venerated in public, VIP, disdained in private, dip, VIP dip. Sort of a do as I say, not as I do. The list of VIP dippers on the right runs from Harold Bloom to Newt Gingrich, but certainly not Ayn Rand, right? Say it ain't so, Elisa Rosenbaum! By the way, Ayn Rand was a heavy smoker who refused to believe that smoking causes cancer. And that kind of brings to mind the people who believe there's no such thing as global warming. Unfortunately, Ayn Rand died of lung cancer in 1982. However, it was revealed in the recent Oral History of Ayn Rand by Scott McConnell. He's the founder of the media department at the Ayn Rand Institute. There's his credentials. That in the end, Ayn Rand was a VIP dipper as well. An interview with Ewa Pryor, a social worker and consultant to Ayn Rand's law firm, Ernst, Cain, Gitlin, and Winnick. Yeah, she had a law firm, verified that on Ayn Rand's behalf, she, Ms. Pryor, secured Rand's Social Security and Medicare payments, which Ayn Rand received under the name of Ann O'Connor. Her husband's name, you see, was Frank O'Connor. As Ms. Pryor said, quote, "Doctors cost a lot more money than books earn, and she could have been totally wiped out without the aid of these two government programs, Social Security and Medicare." Now, this is even though the great and glorious Ayn Rand despised government interference and felt that people should and could live independently. She didn't feel that an individual should take help. A lying, another right-wing. See, this is why I say over and over again that everybody on the political right is a goddamn liar. First and foremost, they are liars. Secondly, they are cowards. Or maybe I have that backwards. But they are liars. Alas, Michael Ford writes, Ayn Rand did and said it was wrong for everyone else to do so. Take help from the government. This is like Bachman's husband. It's like Rand Paul. It's like all of these rancid bastards. And as Michael Ford wrote, apart from the strong implication that those who take the help are morally weak, it is also a philosophic point that such help dulls the will to work, right? If you take unemployment, you don't want to work because you know that $275 a week is such fun to live on. In the end, Ayn Rand, like all conservatives, Republicans, and right-wingers, was a hypocrite. A total hypocrite. But, she could never be faulted for failing to act in her own self-interest. Now, this means she died in 1982, so let's just take the last 2 years of her life. I helped keep Ayn Rand from being thrown in the street. Me, Mike Malloy. And if you are of a certain age, so did you. Now, of course, this is back in the Reagan era. Let's destroy everything. Get rid of all the social safety nets. It's communism. And this bloody goddamn hypocrite, Ayn Rand, this Ruski, this woman named Alisa Zinovyevna Rosenbaum, who came to this country with her communist-inspired philosophy and became a hero, a heroine, whichever, of the flying monkey right in this country, the crazy people, the really stupid bastards in this country that are on the ascendancy and who, along with their corporate masters, have really kind of taken over the political conversation. Ayn Rand, a hypocrite. Medicare and Social Security. Now, to you flying monkeys who listen to this program and wet your pants because you get so pissed off at what you hear me say, how does that make you feel, huh? How do you justify that, you phony little bastards? Tell me, how do you justify it? Oh, my God. Isn't it always thus? You scratch just a little bit below the surface. Well, actually, this took some digging. And this truth was dug out by people at the Ayn Rand Institute. Oh, my goodness sakes alive. Libertarians, my ass. You know, libertarians are, they're the Republicans that want to be able to smoke pot legally. That's about it. They want to have sex with people under the age of 15, legally. Phony asses, I hate them all. Ooh, Mike said the hate word. Ooh, ooh. Ayn Rand. My. Social Security and Medicare, huh, baby? Oh, by the way, Kathy in Maine writes to let me know. And Blue, if you're listening online, happy Australia Day. That's right. Kathy writes, hi, Mike, on this special day, Australia Day, I wanted to extend an olive branch to cough, cough, hack, hack, Blue. No doubt he is celebrating his official public holiday that commemorates the 1788 arrival of the first fleet at Sydney Cove and the proclamation of British sovereignty. Australia Day in Australia seems to mirror our Columbus Day or our Thanksgiving Day. Columbus Day actually commemorates the destruction of the Taino native culture. Thanksgiving Day commemorates the beginning of the end of our goodwill toward our Native American cultures. Similarly, Indigenous Australians think very little of Australia Day, seeing it as a celebration of the destruction of the Aboriginal Native culture by British colonists. In fact, the natives have suggested new names for the holiday, like Invasion Day or Survival Day. But these suggested name changes have not been able to gain widespread public support in Australia, Kathy writes. She adds, so Blue, happy Australia Day, Invasion Day, Survival Day, whatever you call it. I hope you will see that at least one American progressive can try to be somewhat generous and benevolent toward you on your special holiday. Maybe you can even raise a glass on this day for the hardworking American progressives that you are always thinking of in your special way. Kathy in Maine. Australia Day. Who knew? All right, we have a break. Thanks, Kathy. The Maine Coyote. All right, we will be back after a break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Mike Malloy.
Terry sends me an email regarding Ayn Rand. Subject line says, Ayn Rand equal hypocrite. And all Terry writes is, Mike, I suspect that when asked if she was a hypocrite, Ayn Rand shrugged. Yes, indeed. Did you hear about this vicious, filthy insurance company? Actually, it was Ceridian Cobra Services, a company that provides Cobra insurance. You know, when somebody gets fired or loses their job, they can continue. Back in the day, I've done this one time. I had it for 18 months. Of course, the premium quintupled, but that's just the way it goes in the United States. But there, this guy, he's a Vietnam veteran, and Ronald Flanagan, he was fighting cancer and just about to get a biopsy before a stem cell transplant. And his wife came into the room with some very bad news. The couple had been dropped by their insurance carrier and couldn't pay for the procedure, so everything had to stop. The reason for the dropped coverage, the Flanagans from Thornton, Colorado, were 2 cents short on their $328.69 premium payment. Mrs. Flanagan had written a check for $328.67, or not a check, but she did it online, and she said, I pressed a 7 instead of a 9. And she was distraught. She said, I created this, and now my husband won't be able to get his transplant. Her husband was battling multiple myeloma, bone cancer. His doctor said was likely caused by his exposure to the toxin Agent Orange during his service in Vietnam. I don't want to add anything to this story, but Agent Orange is the gift that just keeps on giving, isn't it? Huh? To Vietnamese and to Americans. He's 60 years old. He needed a stem cell transplant. He had a doctor lined up, but he couldn't afford to get the procedure until he's insured again. Well, David Muir at ABC picked up this story and called. It was on ABC News tonight. He called this company, Ceridian, C-E-R-I-D-I-A-N, Ceridian Cobra Services. And it was an ABC affiliate in Denver that first reported the story. The company said it had provided notices that the Flanagan's premium payment was incomplete. The company said in a statement, we did not receive a full and timely payment. And Mrs. Flanagan was provided several notices of the shortage and a grace period reminder notice on the last invoice, along with extended grace dates as provided for under COBRA regulations. 2 goddamn cents. 2 cents. You filthy pig bastards. Well, David Muir at ABC, I think it's David Muir, he got a hold of the story. He called the company. It was on, like I said, it was on ABC News tonight. He recorded it. You could hear what was going on. And they decided to reverse their decision and go ahead and reinstate his insurance. Now, why? I don't know. Probably terrified of the adverse publicity. Although, you know, those days are numbered, where you'll be able to call one of these corporate filthy pig companies and embarrass them through exposure into doing the right thing. But that wasn't good enough. David Muir then said to the person he had on the phone, when this drone, this freak, some man who sounded like he had no goddamn brain, no spinal cord, nothing. All he had was, I don't know, a program chip in his head, and spouted out what the company would program in there. And David Muir said to him, well, do you feel guilty about this? Was it guilty or no? Do you want to apologize for this? And the guy said, apologize for what? And Muir said, for putting this family through this for 2 cents. There's nothing to apologize for. As I said, the policy has been reinstated. And Muir just let it go. That's one of the reasons I don't work in network television. There are many, but that's one of them, because I would have said, you son of a bitch, and probably would have tried to crawl through the phone and have a personal conversation with the guy. I thought I was going to say something violent, didn't you? But isn't that, I mean, it's exactly what I was saying at the beginning of the program tonight that William Grider is writing about. Small d democracy in this country is gone. It has been swallowed by corporatism, by predatory gangster capitalism. And this is a classic example. 2 cents, two goddamn cents on a $328.69 premium. And the man's life hangs in the balance. And these sons of bitches at Ceridian Cobra Services were prepared to kill a man. Literally kill him. Kill him. Over 2 cents. So, you know, I complain about corporate news reporting all the time, but I usually try to mitigate it just a tad by saying there are a few people left who make the effort. And David Muir certainly is one of those people. 2 cents. How much is a human life worth? 2 cents in this case. 2 cents. People wonder why I get so angry and use such bad language. Ooh, hardly the sort of thing you want your children to hear, or your husband or your wife. I mean, you ought to hear that Mike Malloy. He says, God damn. He says, son of a bitch. He would say more if he could. But he just can't control himself. He hears a story like a Cobra administering company wants to murder somebody over 2 cents. And you could tell from, I could tell, wrong pronoun, I could tell from hearing the guy that David Muir was talking to that he's a Glenn Beck listener and probably an Ayn Rand fan. We'll be back after the break. Don't go away. I'm Mike Malloy. Here. You want to have some fun? You know, like Rush Limbaugh, Ayn Rand was a junkie. She was a drug addict for decades. And her drug of choice was Dexamil. Now, you have to be a certain age. You don't remember Dexamil, do you? Yeah, speed. It was a diet pill. Diet pill, quote, quote. I can remember, back in the late 60s. I went back to Ohio, to Toledo, to visit my mother. And being a short, chunky Italian, she was always trying to lose weight. And I walked into her house, and she said, guess what? I said, what? She said, I found a way to lose weight. It's really good. It's a way to lose weight. And I found this thing, and my doctor gave it to me, and I'm losing weight. I'm down, you know, I've dropped 5 pounds in the past month. It's really good. And, you know, it just makes you want to talk a lot. And went, ha-ha! And then she showed me what it was. They were Dexedrine, Dexamil. The trade name was Dexamil. And, you know, what did I know? I had a friend at the time who worked for Sandoz Pharmaceuticals, so he was pushing Black Beauties. Do you remember those? Whoa, what a drug. It was incredible. I drove from Toledo to York, or to Baltimore one time with after having ingested a couple of Black Beauties, and when I got there, I just wanted to turn around and drive back. terrible things the American pharmaceutical industry dumped into our collective bloodstreams. I'm not talking about those pills like they were good. They weren't. They were poison. Absolute goddamn horrific poison. But so many right-wingers are junkies. They're addicted to pills and crap. Like Limbaugh, like the pig man. His thing is OxyContin. And women, I mean, you know, how many marriages has he had now? 7? 23? Who knows? Who cares? But, and then, of course, you have Glenn Beck, who God only knows what this freak has been eating and what's eating him. But Ayn Rand, you want some fun? Google Ayn Rand Dexamil, D-E-X-A-M-Y-L. Just Google it. Ayn Rand Dexamil. Go ahead, you right-wing libertarian freaks. That's one of the reasons, I guess, that they're all in favor of, you know, having no laws about anything so they can get their junk. You know, I have no problem with certain natural, organic, earthbound chemicals, but that's not Dexamil. No, it's not Dexamil. No, 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 no. So just do it. Google Ayn Rand Dexamil. Ah! Thanks to James and Eugene for sending that to me. My God, there's a search results, just what he sent me. Here's the first 10. Good God. Dexedrine, Dexamil. She took two of these pills every day for decades. In an interview with her secretary, 5 milligrams, blah, blah, blah. So not only was she a chain cigarette smoker that eventually killed her from lung cancer, but she also was a drug addict, and she was on Medicare and Social Security. Now, hello, all you little right-wing turds that listen on XM and Sirius, hello, what do you think of that? Ah, you little conservative pissants, what do you think of that?
Oh, he says such bad words on his program. Glenn Beck never, ever, ever cusses. Glenn Beck never uses bad words. All Glenn Beck does is, well, you know, he just, you know, he talks about killing people. And he inspires other people to do it, like Gerard, what's his name?
The rat.
Jared Lochner. Have we got any Glenn Beck? He's already trashed himself? You can't do it anymore? Okay. I'm just getting kind of tired of that anyway, but...
Let me get to the other one.
Oh, you got another one? Oh, yeah, let's do the... Yeah, do the other one. Go ahead. That one's kind of interesting, too.
I've been sitting here for the last few minutes trying to come up with a list of people that I want to kill with a shovel. People that I just like to whack over the head with a shovel. That somebody actually wrote in a letter to the editor... that I wanted to kill Daniel Ruth for his editorial, which I believe I may have said. But how many people have I said, let's kill with a shovel, huh? How many people have I said, let's light him up and shoot him in the head?
That again.
I think quite a few. You know, everybody who has a stinking opinion now seems to be an extremist. There doesn't seem to be anybody that actually makes sense that can get any face time on television. You know, it's all people like Jesse Jackson or Charles Rangel. Man, that guy, there's a guy. Hey, there's where we start. Charles Rangel, do you have the sound effects for me? If we're going to do let's kill people with a shovel, let's do it the right way.
And now, people we'd like to beat to death with a shovel.
Charlie Rangel.
Listen again for more people we'd like to beat to death with a shovel.
See, I feel better already.
Okay, that's enough.
There's a time.
That's enough. And remember when he had his circle jerk in front of the Lincoln Memorial back in the summer? Remember that? Remember when, 70,000 people showed up. He became a televangelist, and lined up behind him was a rabbi. I guess he was a rabbi or somebody in a rabbi's costume. It was a priest. I guess he was a priest or somebody in a priest's costume. And there are a couple of guys clutching Bibles, which I guess were Protestants. How can these people support someone who inspires other people to murder?
Well, Jesus God, Malloy, you're talking about religious people. Religious people always inspire other people to murder. There's no contradiction there.
And now he's going after a 78-year-old professor at City University of New York, Francis Fox Piven, that he wants somebody to go kill as soon as possible. Just like Bill O'Reilly made sure that Dr. Tiller was killed. Oh, well. Our military affairs correspondent, Sharon Gordy, provides me with stuff that it's pretty heartbreaking. In the first place, I'm very anti-militarism because I know since the beginning of the 20th century how the United States military has been so misused. People talk about the Good War, World War II. Any activity that results in 75 million people dead and the advent of nuclear weapons, I don't know. I don't know how that's a good war, but okay. But I'm anti-militarist all the way to the very bottom of my feet. And I had one uncle who was driven insane by the military. I had another uncle who was a combat infantryman, made it to sergeant during the Good War. These are people who are dead now, of course. I had another uncle who was a conscientious objector and served in France as a hospital corpsman. I guess that was it. I guess just three uncles, all of whom are dead now. But so tradition of serving in the military, I guess is true with anybody of my age. Their family members, their uncles and fathers and so on and so forth served to some extent back when we had a draft in World War II. But still, I'm so against militarism because I know I'm anti-military because I know how people are used, how young people, 17, 18, 19 years old, are taken into the military and then have their brains sucked out of their heads, scrubbed, shined up, and replaced with capitalist propaganda, and then sent off to kill or be killed. I'll be back in a second. I'm leading up to something here. Sharon Gordy sent me a couple of things that are just heartbreaking. I want to share them with you. Not that I want to break your heart, but, oh, never mind. We'll be right back. This was in USA Today. I'm sorry, that's usually a crappy source, but here it is. Medical officials estimate that 25 to 35% of about 10,000 ailing soldiers assigned to special wounded care companies or battalions are addicted or dependent on drugs. particularly prescription narcotic pain relievers. That's according to an Army Inspector General's report made public yesterday. Do you get that? Soldiers assigned to special wounded care companies where, you know, before people, soldiers who have had their legs blown off or their stomachs ripped open by IEDs or have their heads blown off, before they are gotten to Ramstein Air Base or wherever they're taken now, the trauma centers, the special wounded care companies or battalions are essentially triage centers, trauma centers, and 25 to 35% of 10,000 soldiers assigned to special wounded care companies are addicted or dependent on drugs. The report also found that these formations, known as WTUs, or Warrior Transition Units, created after the Walter Reed Army Hospital scandal in 2007 as a means of improving care for wounded troops, these formations have become costly war stations where ill, injured, or wounded soldiers wait more than a year to receive a medical discharge. The newly appointed commander of the warrior units, one Colonel Darrell Williams, criticized the report's assertions about drug addiction. Of course. You know, it's the Army Inspector General who made the report, and this dumb bastard criticized it. He said the high rate of drug addiction was based on estimates made by case managers and nurses working with troops that are not statistically valid. Most case managers and nurses interviewed by investigators said up to 35% of soldiers in warrior units are over-medicated, abuse prescriptions, and have access to illegal drugs. They said most soldiers arrive in the units with narcotics provided by battlefield doctors or military bases. They also said a few soldiers under their care are buying narcotics out of pocket and may be mixing legal and illegal drugs. About 3 out of 4 soldiers in the warrior units either leave the Army or active duty. It's just astonishing. The report says most people generally feel the units are the best place in the Army to heal up, but the Army does not have the resources to, quote, appropriately treat drug dependents or drug abusers. The Army doesn't have enough doctors to review requests for medical discharges, and a growing number of soldiers returning to duty from the warrior units may have unresolved medical problems such as mental health or brain injury issues from past deployments. Now, you got to wonder, don't you? I mean, I do. The Army does not have the resources to take care of wounded warriors or to provide counseling or addiction programs for people in those units who treat these wounded warriors and then become addicted themselves. There's no money? Well, goddamn, the biggest expenditure that we have after Medicare is the Pentagon budget, isn't it? Billions upon billions, trillions of dollars over the past 30 years. Trillions! But you see, this is what I've talked about in this program. Capitalism only loves a soldier if he or she goes someplace, kills, blows stuff up, and then gets killed. That's all capitalism wants. Capitalism wants soldiers who are effective in doing capitalism's dirty work in a battle zone, and then have the goddamn decency to just die. Just die, soldier. You killed 10 gooks. Die. Get the hell out of the way. That's what capitalism, it's just like workers. You see, to capitalism, soldiers, Marines, sailors, airmen, they're only workers. They're worker bees. They're just like people who work in factories. That's all. What the soldiers and sailors and Marines and airmen are doing, and I'm not talking about how they're brainwashed by their commanding officers, how they're brainwashed into believing that they're fighting for Jesus. Now, you know, that's a whole different subject. What these men and women are doing are simply making the world safer for capitalism. It has nothing to do with freedom, democracy, independence, love, mom, apple pie, cherry turnovers, or corn popovers. It has nothing to do with that and everything to do with go out there, soldier, and kill so that I, the big-ass, nasty gangster capitalist, can get access to those places where I'm sending you to kill. Oh, and by the way, when you're done killing, have the goddamn decency to die yourself, okay? Because I don't want to take care of you, soldier.
Truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Irish Dave writes in, Mike, in 1968, the second in size to New York City as a domestic heroin market was Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Now the U.S. military is actively engaged in the production of Afghanistan opium. Go figure. Irish Dave. More from our military affairs correspondent. In the Deseret News from Utah, I believe Salt Lake City, there's an article by Kelly Henriod about the newest war vets, the ones coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq, are becoming homeless at an alarming rate. Kelly Henriod writes, in Utah, she writes about a guy named, Jordan Sanford, he's 22. He's living in a house with eight other people. And when he first got home 2 years ago, he lived in a tent. The house he lives in now, with eight other war veterans, is known as the Ark of Eagle Mountain. It is a transitional facility for soldiers who have come home from war only to find themselves without a place to live. Now, in Utah, this guy is one of 350 homeless veterans nationally. 110,000 former servicemen and women don't have permanent housing. While most of them served in Vietnam, a growing population, estimated 9,000 former soldiers, are from the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. This class of veteran faces a new set of problems unseen in previous wars due to roadside bombs, concussions, and head traumas. Are more common than previous wars and often go unseen and unnoticed, where veterans once came home with visible injuries like missing limbs. Many of today's soldiers, who often must endure multiple deployments, are coming home with invisible scars that can wreak severe psychological havoc. And see, capitalism doesn't care about these people. Capitalism, again, if capitalism, the captains of industry, let's take it out of the abstract and put it into the particular. The heads of the big capitalist countries in this country, the heads of the big capitalist companies in the United States who order where the American troops are going to go to blow things up, kill people, and in turn get blown up and die. They do not want to deal with a soldier when he or she comes home. It's too messy. It's icky. It takes money. It takes time. So the ideal soldier to a capitalist is a dead soldier. After that soldier has done as much damage as possible in the country to which he's being sent by the capitalists to begin with. I mean, you do understand that. You do get this, right? Is there anybody out there, even you teabag half moronic halfwits, do you really think that American soldiers are in all these countries in order to defend liberty, democracy, human rights, mom, granny, and apple pie? If you do, you're a goddamn fool. You're worse than I ever thought you could be. That's not why soldiers are there. Ooh, I'm yelling again. Excuse me. Excuse me. So now we have this new class of American veteran, homeless. Many veterans, like the young man this writer wrote about, are finding themselves homeless faster than any of their predecessors, on average around 18 months after returning from war. El Hernandez, manager of the Healthcare for Homeless Veterans program at the VA in Salt Lake City, says, quote, "We are finding that veterans from this era are entering homelessness at younger ages than other eras, the average age being 33. At our clinic, we are seeing less of a problem with substance abuse among homeless Iraq and Afghanistan veterans, but more post-traumatic stress disorder compared to other eras. We see that these veterans are dealing with more serious psychological problems. PTSD, traumatic brain injuries. Jesus Christ Almighty. If you're a mother or a father or an aunt or an uncle or grandparents and you allow your son, your daughter, your niece, your nephew, your grandkid to join the army in these times, shame on you. Shame, damn, goddamn, all over you. Shame on you. Because what's going to happen? What's going to happen when your kid comes home with half his head shot away? This is what's going to happen. Uh-oh. I'm yelling again. The Deseret News writer says, and the problem isn't confined to men. Female veterans are becoming homeless faster than their male counterparts due to family breakups caused by long absences required for soldiers on active duty. That's according to the Department of Veterans Affairs. Women make up 21% of the homeless Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. The article goes on. I'm not going to get that far into it. You can find it if you want to. The Deseret News. The headline is Veteran Crisis, : Newest War Vets Become Homeless at Alarming Rate. Meanwhile, in the financial capitals of the United States, the predatory, blood-sucking sons of bitches who run these huge companies that determine U.S. foreign policy are enjoying their massive bonuses once again, billions and billions of dollars, while a soldier, a goddamn soldier who has gone off into the military. Okay, sometimes there are crackpots who join so they can go legally kill. All right. Sometimes there are people who simply can't find a job or don't have the money for education, and they buy the filthy lie told to them by the recruiter. Sometimes there are people who genuinely believe, like maybe their fathers or uncles did, that if they join the military, they're doing something to preserve and protect and defend the United States, which is another goddamn lie. So they go off, and they do all this, and they come back, and capitalist America, with their multi-billion dollar billionaires and millionaires, you know what those billionaires for whom these soldiers have fought and bled, died, gotten wounded, and now are homeless, corporate America, capitalist America says to those soldiers, screw you. Get out of my sight. Quit bitching. Hey, I would have served my country, but I had a boil on my ass. Isn't that what Limbaugh said? Now, see, how do you know this stuff? And you're not a soldier, you're not a veteran, but you have compassion and you have an understanding of what gangster capitalism is all about. How do you know this stuff and not explode from anger? I mean, these young men and young women are, to use a term from the 60s, these are your brothers and sisters, if not literally, in a communal sense, figuratively speaking. They're your family. They're my family. I don't know how you handle it. I don't handle it very well at all. When I do one of these stories sent in by Sharon, our military affairs correspondent, I goddamn lose it. I just completely lose it. because I know what gangster capitalism is all about and what the goal is and how they look at soldiers. Soldiers are like the people who clean the toilets in their executive suites. Don't want to see them. Don't want to hear it. Just make sure my crapper is clean when I come in the morning and take a dump after I have my $45 coffee and croissant before I come into work. Just make sure the crapper is clean. That's what the predatory gangster capitalists say to the people who clean out their toilets. And that's what they say to the soldier and the Marine. Same thing. Only it's much worse. You know, when you're cleaning somebody's crapper, you can always walk away. You can always tell them to kiss your butt and leave. But when you're a soldier and you go someplace because capitalist America sent you there, and you suffer the trauma of a roadside device that explodes in your face, and when you finally come to and regain consciousness and you look in the mirror and scream, or you try to move and realize you can't scream, because of the goddamn tube in your throat. But when you finally come to your senses again, you realize that nobody's going to take care of you. There's no money. And the capitalist pigs that sent you don't care anything about you and wish you would have died. How do you deal with that? I think the way you deal with that, the way some people deal with it without the serious physical injuries, they go blow up a federal building. They become Timothy McVeigh. We'll be right back.
One, two, three, what are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. Next up is Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7, open up the pearly gates. Well, ain't no time to wonder why we're all gonna die. Well, come on, brothers, throughout the land. Back your boys up to Vietnam. Come on, fathers, don't hesitate. Send them off before too late. Be the first one on your block. Every boy come home in a box. And it's 1, 2, 3. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. Next stop is Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7. Open up the pearly gates. Well,
we have gremlins tonight, 10 before the hour. Tonight we have gremlins every night. And finally this from ProPublica, Marianne Wong. In Houston, Representative Giffords could receive brain injury treatment. Thousands of troops do not. Okay? And the writer at ProPublica says, as Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords begins rehabilitative therapy in Houston after being shot in the head in Tucson earlier this month, she was transferred today to the TIR Memorial Hermann, a premier rehabilitation hospital renowned for its treatment of traumatic brain injuries. On its website, the hospital calls itself one of the very few hospitals in the country designed as a model system for traumatic brain injury. Among the techniques it relies on is cognitive rehabilitation therapy, a tailored type of medical treatment designed to retrain the brain to do basic tasks. How many soldiers do you think are going to receive this kind of treatment, Truth Seeker? Giffords will be getting a treatment that many troops don't. As we've reported, that would be ProPublica, the Pentagon's health program, TRICARE, has refused to cover cognitive rehabilitation therapy for the tens of thousands of service members who have suffered brain injuries in the line of duty. TRICARE, which provides insurance-style coverage to troops and many veterans, does cover speech and occupational therapy, but they do not provide the kind of therapy that is being used on Representative Giffords. According to the Office of the Surgeon General, traumatic brain injuries have different types and levels of severity. They can include penetration injuries like Gifford's or mild brain trauma like the kind often sustained by troops in an explosion. The latter, mild brain trauma, has been called one of the signature wounds of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, and tens of thousands of cases have been left undiagnosed by the military's medical system. Last week, Senator Claire McCaskill, chairman of the Subcommittee on Contracting Oversight, cited our findings while announcing an investigation into the Pentagon's decision to deny treatment of traumatic brain injuries to troops. In 2008, McCaskill was one of 10 senators, including then-Senator Barack Obama, who signed a letter to Defense Secretary Robert Gates urging the military to provide coverage of cognitive rehabilitation, quote, so that all returning service personnel can benefit from the best brain injury care this country has to offer, end quote. That will never happen. When a soldier suffers traumatic brain injury, it's a crapshoot as to whether or not he is going to get or she is going to get any kind of treatment whatsoever. For the most part, they do not. They're given Tylenol or some Valium and told to buck up. Don't be a whiner. You're in this man's army, soldier. Shut your goddamn mouth. Pick up your weapon. It's time to redeploy. And when they finally do get out, what kind of treatment do they get? Why would anyone want to serve in any branch of the U.S. military at this point in our history when the country is run by gangster capitalism, when the country's foreign policy is determined not by small d democracy, even though that's the lie that's put out there by everybody, including Obama, but who we invade and blow up and kill is determined by to what extent we want or need or insist on having their natural resources. Does anyone out there still believe that we went to Iraq to overthrow our former puppet? Does anyone believe we went to Panama to overthrow our former puppet? Does anyone believe that we're in Afghanistan to shore up our current puppet? And the other thing I don't get, I understand the human rights issue involved in repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell. But why such a hard fight by people who happen to be gay to put themselves at the mercy of gangster capitalism and risk their lives? Is there a homosexual man or woman out there who believes, I guess there must be, that in joining the United States military, they're doing something to further freedom, justice, truth? Is there any heterosexual man or woman out there who really believes that? Is there? All right, when we come back, will Clarence Thomas get away with a federal crime? We're going to talk about Uncle Clarence here and some other stuff. And we may take some phone calls. What the hell? As a matter of fact, during this break, we shall open up the lines. And if you want to call in and get in the queue, we'll chat with you when we come back. Okay? I hope. Gangster capitalism says the same thing to soldiers, whether they're gay or straight, Jew or Gentile, black or white, man or woman. Go do my bloody work and then shut your goddamn mouth. Hopefully you'll die, but if you stay alive, shut up. Go join the VFW. Go wear the little garrison hat and drink beer, but shut your goddamn mouth. 7 past the hour. The Malloy Show. We're going to come to your calls here in just a second. But our good friend Bob Alexander, who somehow escaped from the Somali pirates that were holding him, he asked a question, will Clarence Thomas get away with a federal crime? And he answers the question, of course he will. But it's fun to think about what would happen to him if we lived in a real country. What Bob sent me here is a blog from legalschnauzer.blogspot.com. And the writer there points out that Clarence Thomas is amending financial disclosure forms dating back more than 20 years in an apparent effort to avoid prosecution for making false statements to the United States government. Now, let's see. Martha Stewart went to prison because she lied to the FBI. Not insider trading. Not because she committed some kind of a violent act with a handgun, but because she lied to the FBI. How long was she in prison? 18 months? 18 months? This piece of human waste, Uncle Clarence Thomas, U.S. Supreme Court Justice, is frantically backdating and going back over 20 years of financial disclosure forms to avoid prosecution. Hal Nielsen, an FBI special agent in Oxford, Mississippi, undoubtedly wishes he had been given such an opportunity. This FBI agent also probably wishes the mainstream press would try to make the kind of excuses for him that are being made for Clarence Thomas. What happened to the special agent? Nielsen was indicted on January 14th for failing to disclose his financial interests and making false statements to a federal agency. According to a Mississippi-based law blog, Nielsen was indicted under 18 U.S. Code 1001. That's the same law that Uncle Clarence Thomas clearly violated when he failed to disclose almost $700,000 of his wife's income over at least a five-year period. Clarence, with the help of the Supreme Court's Public Information Office, has released information that indicates he's trying to amend his forms going back to 1989. That means the amount of undisclosed income probably is way more than the $700,000 that was originally reported by the watchdog group Common Cause. Well, Uncle Clarence Thomas is likely to get away with the whole crime, or a slap on the wrist, if that. The feds are hardly going easy on Hal Nielsen, FBI special agent in Oxford, Mississippi. Here is how Mississippi lawyer Clarence Guthrie on his blog describes the issue Agent Nielsen faces. Under Title 18, United States Code, Section 1001, it is a crime to, one, knowingly and willfully, two, make any material, false, fictitious, or fraudulent statement or representation, three, in any manner within the jurisdiction of the executive, legislative, or judicial branch of the United States. That was the charge that Martha Stewart served time for. It is a crime to tell a lie to the federal government, even if your lie is oral and not under oath, and even if you have received no Miranda warnings of any kind. You must know that your statement is false at the time you made it, but you do not have to know that lying to the government is a crime. Any person convicted under this statute faces statutory penalties of a possible fine and up to 5 to 8 years in prison. Lock the son of a bitch up, not the FBI agent, this phony bastard that sits on the Supreme Court, Uncle Clarence. How did Hal Nielsen, the FBI agent, wind up stuck in this briar patch? What did he do that makes the feds want to send him to prison for up to a quarter century? Here is how attorney Clarence Guthrie described it in a post dated January 15th, 2011. Quote, an FBI agent in Oxford, Mississippi was indicted this week for making false official statements to a federal official, among other things. The agent was the supervisory agent in charge of the FBI's Oxford resident agency, and the indictment charges that he failed to disclose that he had a financial interest in the Oxford, Mississippi FBI building since 2004, and that he was not truthful on his confidential financial disclosure report that FBI agents are required to fill out. Finally, it is alleged that he knowingly and willfully made and caused to be made a materially false and fraudulent statement and representation to an agent of the Department of Justice, Office of the Inspector General, during an interview. This is a big case, and if you happen to be reading this while doing research for your term paper on irony, it's the best example I've ever seen, end quote. Now, this attorney wrote those words before the Clarence Thomas story broke over this past weekend. Let's break down the material in bold above what this agent is charged with to determine exactly what Agent Nielsen is alleged to have done. He failed to disclose that he had a financial interest in something. Clarence Thomas did that. He was not truthful on his financial disclosure form. Neither was Clarence Thomas. He made a materially false and fraudulent statement and representation to the federal government. Clarence Thomas did that too. Now, let's do some math. It appears that the feds are seeking a 25-year prison term for Nielsen based on 5 years for each of five counts. Based on information currently available to us, it appears Clarence Thomas made false statements over at least a 20-year period from 1989 to 2009 using the same sentencing guidelines that are being applied to Hal Nielsen, FBI agent. That means Clarence Thomas should be looking at about 100 years in federal prison. As for the $1.5 billion fine the government is seeking against Agent Nielsen, Clarence Thomas apparently should face about four times more counts than the Mississippi FBI agent. That should come to a $6 billion fine for Mr. Justice, Your Honor, Sir, Uncle Clarence. As for the mainstream press, it seems to be playing a role in helping to excuse Uncle Clarence's actions. The Washington Post reported that the applicable law does not require Thomas to report the amount of his wife's income. That, of course, is irrelevant because Clarence Thomas checked none under spouse's non-investment income. Regardless of the amount, that's a false statement under the law. Also, the Washington Post neglects to mention that Section 104 of the law references possible criminal penalties under the U.S. Code. That would be Section 1001, which we have discussed above, and the Post, curiously, does not care to mention it. Of course, he'll get away with it. Clarence Thomas is a very necessary fixture on the U.S. Supreme Court. He is what the teabaggers and the right-wingers point to when they're accused of being the racist pigs that they are. Look at Uncle Clarence! Clarence Thomas belongs in a court before a jury, a federal court, in Washington, D.C., a jury of his peers, what would that be? The other seven justices, or the other eight justices? No, just a jury of his peers. Will he ever be? What about the agent, the FBI agent down in Mississippi? He had a financial interest in the goddamn building where the office was of the FBI. And for that, he might spend 25 years in prison because he didn't mention it on his financial disclosure form. But you see, capitalism only likes FBI agents when they are busting people overseas. What do you want to bet that this FBI agent was probably investigating bank fraud or some kind of corporate drug smuggling or white-collar crime, right? What do you want to bet? Clarence Thomas is a white-collar crime. We'll be back.
truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's More Mike Malloy.
And I don't even drive. 21 past the hour. Oh, wait. We've got people on hold. Oh, my goodness. Mark is in San Francisco listening on Green 960. Hey, Mark.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Pretty good. You know, you've asked me in the past about how can we get everybody organized in the progressives and make a movement.
Mm-hmm.
And I did some thinking, and I'm coming up with an idea, and I wanted to run it by you.
All right.
And I'm thinking of one main website where all the progressive groups can link in and communicate through one site and organize through one site.
Oh, have you got it yet?
Well, I mean, I have some ideas, but it would probably be somebody like Tom Hartman or somebody, you know, high-profile progressive that could probably get it going. I don't have the connections he has, but or, you know, Norman Goldman or yourself, maybe when you're on your cruise, you could talk amongst the rest of the progressives. And
you know, that's a great idea, except for one thing. Most, that works for right-wingers, because they're brain dead and they have to do exactly what they're told and they do lockstep. They're kind of like, lemmings. But people on the left, they want to do their own thing.
If you have it in one site, you can just link in and they can have their own progressive group, but you could link into that site and you could, you know, from that site go to those different progressive groups.
It'll never work, I'm afraid, Mark, for lefties or even for liberals. It just wouldn't work. Decades ago, Will Rogers said, "I'm not the member of any organized political party. I'm a Democrat." And there's a lot of truth to that. You know, trying to organize Democrats into something like that or liberals into something like that would be like trying to herd cats. I mean, it can't be done. Let me give you an example. I remember back in the in the late 70s, early 80s here in the South when the anti-nuke movement was just starting to manifest and starting to have demonstrations and fight against nuclear power as defined by the capitalists. And all the decisions made in the Clamshell Alliance here in the South, that was one of them. There were several anti-nuke organizations. And here's the way decisions were made. Everybody who wanted to have their opinion considered in the decision, whatever the decision was, it might have been to cross onto corporate property and get arrested. But whatever the decision was, it had to be done by consensus. Now, consensus is not majority rule. See, when you have majority rule, somebody gets left out. So consensus means I can remember sitting around till 3-4 in the morning in a tent in South Carolina, an open tent with the goddamn mosquitoes eating us alive until every single person, there must have been 65, 70 people sitting in that circle until everybody's idea was incorporated into the next day's plan of action. Now, that was before personal computers. This was back in the late 70s. I can't imagine lefties or liberals trying to agree, well, let's have one website. You know, where we can check in, where we can coordinate everything. It just, I'm sorry, Mark, it's a good idea in theory, but it just wouldn't work.
Well, you asked me and I came up with that. Well, how about this? I wanted to also give you something on Social Security.
Okay.
You know, Boehner's now he's saying, people are living longer, so let's raise the age. Well, my answer to that is that's a job killer. So when they talk about raising the age of Social Security, mm-hmm. the answer is that's a job killer. You put more people in the workforce, that's less jobs. In fact, lower the age and take the cap off, and let's create jobs by putting people on Social Security and not taking them off.
Well, you know, if they just took the cap on Social Security, on FICA deductions, if they just took the cap off, like you're saying, like a lot of people are saying, Social Security would be solvent into two or three centuries from now. But look what the great Democratic President Barack Obama just did in order to satisfy his corporate, I don't want to say masters, that sounds too racist, but the corporate people who dictate the terms of how this country's run. Look what Obama just did. He just reduced for, what, a year? Ha ha, that's a knee slapper. The amount of the FICA deduction, it went from 6 point something down to 4 point something. Now, what that does, it allows the Republicans to begin what they've been trying to do for the past 80 years, and that is destroy Social Security. So what Barack Obama has done in reducing the FICA contribution, the money comes out of all of our paychecks for Social Security. What he has done is to guarantee down the road there's going to be a hideous shortage, A. B, what he's also done is just handed these filthy goddamn Republicans a perfect campaign issue in 2012, when this thing is supposed to run out. In 2012, when Obama says, okay, the year's up, we're going to go back from 4.8 to 6.4 contribution, then these filthy, disgusting Republicans can say, tax increase! Tax increase! Obama is nuts about this kind of stuff. I don't know who in the hell is advising him to do something like that that's going to come back and bite him on his ass when he's looking to run for re-election. There is no way he can get out of this one. We'll be right back.
And I'm just gone 16. My home is in Manan, where I was weaned. I've learned all my life to blame, and so I'm a part of the Patriot game. Come all you young rebels and list while we sing.
It's more Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. I've got a story here that I wanted to get to tonight, but I asked people to call in. I got people on hold here, so I'm going to go to the phones. But I'm going to do this tomorrow night. This is one of those stories that makes me shaky, angry. You know, I mean, there are various levels of anger. Right? You can get pissed off. You can get really angry. You can become irritated. And then there's stuff that makes you just, whatever the next level is beyond rage, where you start to shake, you know, because your body is flooded with, what are all those chemicals, all those hormones? Adrenaline, what else? Cortisone, cortisol, norepinephrine, stuff like that, you know, and your chest tightens up. This is not healthy stuff. It really isn't. Your chest tightens up. You know, it's the fight or flight chemicals and or hormones or what are the hell substances in your body. And when I come across a story like this and I feel my chest start to tighten up and my hands get shaky and, I start to get a little bit dizzy, I know, you know, those are the three warning signs you're about to have a heart attack or a stroke or whatever, you know, not that I particularly give a goddamn, because when something, a story like, I'm not trying to tease you, I'm just going to have to do it tomorrow, but, and you'll have to listen tomorrow if you want to hear it, but it's just one of those stories that when I first came across this early this morning, a couple of people have sent me links to it also, you know, I just about freaked out. That shaky, angry. Perez in Santa Rosa. Hey, Perez.
Hi, Mike.
How you
doing? How are you, buddy?
I'm okay. How about you?
I'm okay, man. I'm hanging in there.
Good.
Managing, you know.
Oh, yeah.
How's the book?
It hit a sandbar about a year ago and has not moved.
Well, Don't lose hope. Don't lose hope, buddy. Don't lose sight of it.
No, this has happened to me before. You know, my career started as a writer, a journalist, and I've just got the point. I don't even write the blogs at my website anymore. Kathy writes them all. I don't know. I just hit a brick wall. I haven't written anything in a year.
Yeah.
Nothing. So.
Yeah, well, you do have a daughter, and I have a granddaughter the same age. Mm-hmm. I forget to mention that every time I manage to get through and talk to you, so I'm right there with you, buddy. It's an amazing thing, and you think about the future. And that's what I always ask myself about some of these rotten rat bastard reptilians. These people have children. You know what I mean? Do they really have?
These people
have kids. Do they think about the future? Are they to have that death wisher going or something? Do they think they're going to be rescued or raptured? Or their chemicals and the operation is going to keep them alive forever over there in the labyrinthian caverns underneath the baking sands of Dubai. Who knows?
I know that Hannity has kids. I know that Beck has kids. Yeah. Limbaugh, mm-hmm. I don't think Limbaugh can.
Oh, God.
I don't think he can do that.
It should be outlawed. Right. We've got to hunt them down.
But I don't know what they think about. I guess these people feel, these predatory capitalists or these thugs that are in right-wing media, they feel they're protected. I mean, you know, when you're making $15, $20, $30, $40 million a year, you can hire a goddamn army to surround your house and protect your children and bring in imported air and water for them to breathe and drink, and you really don't have to worry about it as long as you have the bucks. You know what I'm saying?
That's right. And pretty soon the walls won't help you, though.
Well, that's true.
People you had trained to guard the walled communities or turn their guns around. But before I talk about oil, I want to talk about that pig, Clarence Thomas. That's one reason I hate Joe Biden. What he did to Anita Hill,
yeah.
He was the chairman of the committee. Remember that grinning bastard?
I remember.
Anyway, and also what he said to Scott Ritter. Remember what he said to Scott Ritter when he told him what if he went to Iraq and he told him if he went to Iran, the same kind of thing was going to happen. And he was right, right? He said, that's above your pay grade, Marine.
Is that what Biden
yelled
said?
At him. Yeah. That's what Biden did. And I'm telling you, I was so mad. And then they all shrunk like scared little rabbits when Clarence Thomas said this is a high-tech lynching.
Yeah.
No, this isn't because you're black. This is because you're inexperienced and incompetent.
Right.
And also a misogynistic sexual harassment guy.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's it. Anita Hill, brilliant woman, University of Oklahoma Press, one of the great, and Oklahoma, one of the, actually people make fun of OU, but it has one of the great libraries and presses. They published all kinds of interesting books.
Hmm.
But also oil, they introduced the oil in the conversation, Mike, when they said, we'll get paid back with Iraqi oil for this invasion, right?
Right.
Remember?
Oh, yeah.
So now we can't talk about oil anymore. Because, see, they inoculated themselves against us, see, saying mm-hmm. that about oil. Now we can't talk about oil. People are afraid. Here's the people, even the right-wingers said, well, where is all this money we were supposed to get from the oil? Only mm-hmm. they can say it. So since they've introduced it, and I have reason to believe, you know, the Saudis inflated their oil reserves just all of a sudden overnight. They just all of a sudden said they had like 50 or 70% more than they had the day before.
Mm-hmm.
They just do this sometimes, you know, these countries.
Yeah, well,
I think it was a deal. The Saudis did the 9/11 and the Bushes took the Iraqi oil off the market for them. That's what I think. Sorry.
Well, no, you're probably right. you know, the great game that's practiced against the whole world is run by these predatory gangster capitalists. It's a game that you and I can only hear about and observe. We can't touch these people.
No.
If we could get 150 million Americans to resist, then it would all change.
That might do it. Yeah, or maybe even less. But there's another thing too. These guys, I mean, Clarence Thomas was installed with George W. in mind, let me tell you. These people think long range. They don't mind people dying. In fact, they hope that people die to cut down the population. There's too many workers right now. That's the problem, you know.
Yeah, I hear you.
There's too many. And we're being trained to be servile right now. That's what's going on in this country. And like Obama, I couldn't take it anymore.
Well,
when he said the most productive workers in the world, which is true, but none of the wages are flat, none of those benefits have been shared by the workers, gone upstairs. And also, this thing about workers need to be reeducated. In other words, putting it back on us like it's our fault.
I know.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
It's so insidious. They plant that seed in there, and then we go, well, got to see them do it, and someday I'll be rich like those guys. Yeah, the biggest myth in American history.
Yeah, it is. That's the story that was sold. I remember being sold that story when I was in school in the 50s, when I was a little kid, you know, that I could grow up and the certain things I had to do, and my reward would be that when I became a full grown up, full fledged American, the rest of the world would get down on its knees anytime I asked and very gently and politely kiss my ass. Prez, I gotta leave there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. That was what we were taught. That's exactly what we were taught, and God help us, we believed it. We did. Sean is in Battleground, Washington. Hey, Sean.
Mike, as if it wasn't bad enough that we had to be subjected to Paul Ryan and Michelle Bachmann before they fluttered back to their demonic flying monkey lairs. Am I the only person that's getting sick and tired of Barack Obama's impression of Ronald Reagan and Bill Cosby as he wags his finger at us, talking about personal responsibility?
No, you're not. You're not the only one. No, I'm right there with you. And I think there's a line behind you that stretches for miles of people who have just about had enough of this insanity.
You know, Mike.
Yeah, go ahead.
If people really want to understand conservatism, I highly encourage people to read The Bell Curve by Charles Murray. Last time I checked, Charles Murray is comfortably ensconced over at the American Enterprise Institute, a mainstream conservative organization. And that man basically believes that poor people are genetically disposed to not be able to be productive human beings. And he's a mainstream Republican.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. I wonder what that came out in, what, the late 80s, early 90s?
About 94, I
94,
say.
Yeah. I remember, I have not read the entire thing. I've read enough condensations of it in various publications to get the gist of what it was about. And I heard enough discussions about it that, as a matter of fact, I remember talking about it. I was doing radio back in the mid-90s, and I remember talking about it. And it was just an absolute goddamn outrage. And the fact that so many right-wingers, and not just right-wingers, but Reagan Democrats and the rest of them actually believe that. It fits perfectly into the racist attitudes in this country. Perfectly.
And, you know, Mike, last October, the president could have used the bully pulpit to talk about the Employee Free Choice Act, to talk about pulling us out of these free trade agreements.
Right.
He did nothing like that.
Right. What he did do, though, he froze the paychecks of all the federal workers so that, that was a nice little kissy face gift to the right-wing Republicans. Not that it's going to make a dent worth a damn. It's not going to even be noticeable in trying to reduce this horrendous national debt that started with Ronald Reagan and has been building ever since.
It's the audacity of hypocrisy. You've got the Wall Street people who are backing him, and they're the ones who are shiftless and unproductive and a burden on society.
Isn't that the truth?
And yet he's wagging his finger at us about, you need to go get an advanced degree if you want to have any chance of a future in this country. You know, I mean.
Yeah.
And that doesn't make me an anti-intellectual, by the way. Some of my favorite human beings in the world are people like Noam Chomsky and
right.
Cornel West, who have advanced degrees.
Right.
It doesn't make me an anti-intellectual to say that someone who doesn't go to college should be entitled to have a decent life in this country.
No, it doesn't, and nor does it make me or anybody else. Sean, thanks, man. I got to leave it there. I appreciate you checking in, pal. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
before the hour, according to some late news reports here, the family of Hosni Mubarak, the dictator of Egypt, the family of the dictator, is starting to leave the country. Gamal Mubarak, with his wife and daughter, left for London. And other family members are starting to bail out. There's some stuff going on. Email here from Dave in Kentucky about Ayn Rand that we were talking about earlier tonight. Mike, thanks for your segment on Ayn Rand's collecting Social Security checks. You have to be of a certain age. You had to have been assigned her silly philosophical novels, or you had to sit through her sanctimonious lectures to fully appreciate her hypocrisy. Marcus Aurelius was our antidote, the meditations of the emperor, aphorisms he repeated to make to himself, not jive, pumped-up drivel about how other people ought to live in a made-up Cold War fairyland. But I digress. I'm shocked to learn that Miss Rand had quite the secret life. It's like learning that in retirement, Nikita Khrushchev was an Amway salesman. Dave in Kentucky. Yeah, well. See, this is the stuff that and great thanks to the person who came up with this, writing at Huffington Post, and also from James in Eugene, Oregon, who sent the all the Google hits on Ayn Rand and her addiction to so-called diet pills. The Dexedrine, Dexamil, as it was called, the trade name. If you want more information about that, just Google Ayn Rand Dexamil. I don't know why you would want it, but if you do. Arnold is in Durham, North Carolina. Hey, Arnold.
Hey, man. Long time, no talk.
Yeah,
how you doing, my brother?
Did I piss you off or something?
No, man. Okay. I've just been in this state of depression. You know, I haven't talked to you since October.
That's right.
Since the great shellacking we got. You know, I mean, it's just so many up and down through that time when he compromised. So many compromises. I'm just got sick.
I know.
I got politically sick, you know.
And then listen
to the speech last night. He wants to. He loved to talk to the Republicans with that nostalgia, that Sputnik moment. Come on now. Only thing I saw nostalgic last night was that guy Paul Ryan. That's his name. With that Eddie Munster haircut. That was really nostalgic.
Did you stick around and listen to Michelle Bachmann, the woman?
I would have threw up in. Man, if I heard her name, I'd throw up sometimes.
Well, you should have stuck around because she was looking. She never looked into the camera. She was looking, I don't know, like she was looking up and to the right during the whole time. It was the weirdest damn thing I have ever seen. I don't know who she was talking to.
I heard somebody talk with that early on. I think somebody thought. And she was looking at another camera that the teabaggers put there and not looking at the pool camera that the other people had there. It just shows you what kind of nutcake she is, you know. And, so many things have transpired. Since I talked to you, Michael. Mm-hmm. And, so many things I want to talk about. With Tom DeLay wear those same tight brown pants he dances with for the next 3 years, or will he not wear them, you know?
He's not. Arnold, Tom DeLay will never go to prison. He's been convicted, but this punk will never go to prison. I swear to you that the Texas Court of Appeals will overturn his conviction. I swear to you that will happen. This is Tom DeLay. This is the bug man. This is a guy who spent like 20 years before he went to Congress sucking in all those chemicals. The man is insane. I wouldn't want to be in the same county with Tom DeLay, because when he goes off, there's going to be just all kinds of hell to pay. Did you ever see the movie Blue Velvet?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember Frank Sniffin had that little face mask? What was it, Kathy? Frank Booth was the character's name, the crazy man in Blue Velvet. And remember, he had that face mask and he kept going, oh, you know, right before he kills somebody.
Right, whatever.
He was breathing in. I have no idea what it was. That's delay. That's Tom Delay. I mean, he's he used to suck in that parathion or whatever, that stuff that kills roaches.
And you know, and another thing, man, what you thought it was a night, you know, old picnic show to Thomas, Uncle Clarence Thomas, old picnic show. You know I call him old picnic show, right? And, you know, like, my boy Eric Holder is showing himself and conveniently sending all the gumbos to jail, all the gibanos
right.
to jail, but he won't dare touch nothing like this. He would not dare to bring himself around to touch Clarence Thomas. I mean, it's just a sad situation here.
Wait a minute, you told me once before, and we're almost out of time, but what do you mean by picnic shoulder again?
Oh, that was back in the slavery when they killed hogs, you know, that, most of slaves, the black people got the entrails, the feet, face, the nose, and the slave who was a house Negro, he got the picnic shoulder.
That's right. That's
what Clarence Thomas was, you know. It's kind of like the Republicans handled those school vouchers, you know.
Arnold, listen, man, I'm out of time. Hear the music. I got to go. Listen, please call in before we have 3 minutes left. I'd love to talk to you, all right?
All right, brother. We'll talk to you later.
All right, Arnold. Take care. See, Arnold's the type of guy that can tell white people's secrets. Stuff that you will not know unless you know Arnold. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.